The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service. I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, The Social Network. When Janik Zuh Bravo first read the 148 tweets that would eventually become the movie Zola, she immediately knew the story was made for the big screen. I sent it to both my agent and my manager, and I said, I don't know how this works, but I want this, she recalls. As the director of the film, set for release June 30th, Bravo wanted to bring the same comedic suspense that captivated Twitter users when, in 2015, Miss Wells relayed her tale of a waitress and a sex worker embarking on a wild cross-country adventure. To stay faithful to the story, Bravo asked herself one guiding question. If I were going to retell one of the most upsetting but exciting parts of my life, how would I cast my narrative? The answer was by honoring the art of storytelling while acknowledging the trauma that underscored the lived experiences a young Black woman chose to share with the world. This movie is so rooted in my DNA, Bravo says. When I read those tweets that night and felt this story was mine to tell, it was because I felt so much like Miss Wells. I thought if I found myself in this story, this is who I would be. In it. This is how I would retell it. The next article is titled, Questlove's Summer of Soul is Bigger Than Black Woodstock. The revolution that once could not be televised is finally coming to screens. A moment in Black music history might have been lost forever had the musician, historian, and now documentarian Amar Questlove Thompson not stepped in. Footage from the 1969's Harlem Cultural Festival had been collecting dust in a window's basement for nearly 50 years, but in 2016, an opportunity fell into Thompson's lap when David Dienerstein and Robert asked for 5 minutes of his time. As the two men told him details of the festival, which had featured musical greats like Stevie Wonder, Sly and the Family Stone, Mahalia Jackson, and Nina Simone, Thompson figured there was no way he wouldn't have known about such a monumental event. Instantly, I called BS, Thompson recalls. I'm like, I was YouTube before YouTube existed. There are no concert factoids that I don't know about first. I thought these two dudes were trying to flex on me. They weren't. The festival took place over the course of 6 weeks in Mount Morris Park during the last summer of the 60s. It was attended by nearly 300,000 people. Recognizing the importance of that moment, a man named Paul Tolchin filmed it, hoping to sell the footage. But he couldn't, and Tolchin died in all that film still in his basement. And before Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, premiered at the 2021 Sundance Film Festival, most people had never heard of the event. Though Thompson was enraged that this piece of entertainment history had been kept from the world, he still didn't know how involved he wanted to be in the project. He thought Dienerstein and Robert were asking him to produce, as he had with the Broadway musicals Fella and Hamilton, but they actually wanted him to direct. Besides a video for Common, I've never directed anything in my life, Thompson says. Why me? This is too historically important for you to give it to a first-time driver behind an 18-wheeler or go crazy. cross country. So Thompson dodged Dinerstein and Robert for 7 months as he dealt with his imposter syndrome. Eventually, he signed on to direct before Tolshin's widow disposed of the footage. When Thompson finally committed to the project, he and his producing partners had every intention of calling the film Black Woodstock. Though the Harlem Cultural Festival began weeks before Woodstock, one festival became a household name while the other faded into obscurity. Black Woodstock was how Tolshin referred to the historic footage 50 years ago as he struggled to find a buyer. But the deeper Thompson and his team dug into the material, the more they recognized the title didn't fully serve the story. This was bigger than Black Woodstock, Thompson explains. It was disrespectful to call it that. For me, the subtitle, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, is the stronger statement, because that's the proverbial middle finger that says, yes, this was magic moment happened, and it was not allowed to be amplified. Now, more than 5 decades later, the Harlem Cultural Festival is getting just a fraction of the recognition it always deserved, thanks to a fateful series of events. Summer of Soul streams on Hulu beginning July 2nd. Because of what we've been doing and going through with the protests this year and the killings of unarmed men and dealing with poverty, it is so important that the story resonates with everyone, Thompson says. Whether you were there and you know these people or you weren't there, this is for everybody. The next article is titled, From the Bodega to the Big Time, Desis and Mero have taken their Tims all the way to the top with their talk show. Desis Nice and the kid Mero have flipped the late night talk show scene on its head. Born Daniel Baker and Joel Martinez, respectfully, the Bronx natives started their first podcast, Desis vs. Mero, in 2013. Since then, they have proven that the two hardworking, culture-shifting brothers are better than one, and that you don't have to change who you are to make it big. We hang our hat on authenticity and our natural chemistry when we get together, says Mero, 38. Interestingly enough, when the two first met, it wasn't an automatic bromance. Though they attended the same summer school program for a summer in high school, they only occasionally ran into each other. It wasn't until they reconnected on Twitter years later that the former acquaintances began to form a friendship, reminiscing about shared experiences as first-generation New Yorkers, Desis being the son of Jamaican immigrants and Mero of Dominican immigrants. Followers enjoyed watching the two interact on social media. The positive response from their community and fans encouraged them to start their podcast. We just took off, says Desis, 40. Despite their early success, Desis and Mero now knew that navigating the entertainment business as Black men wouldn't necessarily be easy. We were in a position that, statistically, we were not supposed to be in, explains Mero. We were like, we got this opportunity, let's make the most of it, let's just show and prove. The pressure was obviously there, but I was feeling kind of not lucky, but like we deserve this. It's rare to get this look in entertainment. In 2015, Desis and Mero started the Bodega Boys podcast. A year later, their television show, Desis and Mero, launched on Viceland, and in 2019, Showtime picked it up as a late-night talk show. As they have created one popular series after another, Desis says the duo's biggest challenge over the years has been countering the notion that a show hosted by two Black men is solely for Black audiences. Just because it's two people of color doesn't mean you can't watch the show and relate to what we're talking about, he says. Guests have ranged from politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Stacey Abrams to actors and musicians such as Glenn Close, Issa Rae, Missy Elliott, and the late Chadwick Boseman. We dress in what we wear regularly, Desi says. The other late night hosts, they wear suits. The little difference sets our show apart from the others. When the pandemic hit in early 2020, their pair took a brief hiatus, but they soon returned to host the show from their respective homes. While the location has changed, their tradition of hilariously dissecting pop culture, news, and current events remained the same. The fact that Mero is on the same wavelength and bandwidth with me, Desi says, that's the secret in the sauce. The next article is titled, Freedom Summer. Independence Day may be upon us, but these new releases remind us that true liberation comes from within. Sunny Days, Nicole Perkins, Sometimes I Trip on How Happy We Could Be, is summer reading at its finest. Equal parts juicy joy, plaintive longing, vulnerable honesty, and it's funny because it's true moments, this lyrical essay collection is the perfect companion for fruity drink-fueled afternoons by the pool. Nothing is off limits as Perkins recounts the evolution of her relationship with God, sex, her mental health, and most importantly, herself. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you'll root for her as she discovers her own strength. Chasing Freedom, historical fiction and fantasy joined forces to tell the story of the Orisha known as Yamaya in Shallow Waters, a novel. Anita settles into the role of ritual storytelling, re-imaging the ocean ruling deity as a 17-year-old mermaid separated from her family. She traverses the Middle Passage and follows the Underground Railroad to save the man who once rescued her. Along the way, she comes into her powers from healing to manipulating the elements, and learns the true value of being free. Rebirth, from baptismal pools to fishing holes to white women's tears, water permeates the pages of Kendra Allen's debut, Book of Poetry, The Collection Plate. Within the compilation, the author loops together personal history, Black folks' shared American narrative, and aspects of pop culture. The poems examine how religion and hierarchy inform the spaces Black women and girls inhabit, and how we blow past those boundaries, swimming toward the horizon even as the undertow threatens to pull us in another direction. Legacy. Vanessa Rowley pulls readers into the story of Dorothy Doll Kerwin Thomas from the first page of Alan Queen, a novel. Urgency underscores every action of our protagonist, who borrows her name from the real-life woman whose journey took her from enslavement to a life as one of the wealthiest people in the West Indies. Whether she was purchasing her mother's way out of bondage, fighting for financial freedom for Black women, or building her own entrepreneurial legacy, Dahl knew that power was a crucial component of liberation. Manhood, at once absurd and shot through with startling reality, Chris Stuck's Give My Love to the Savages will rattle around in your head and your heart long after you finish reading it. The sharply drawn characters in his searing short stories move through the world as only Black men can. The opening tale uses a second-person point of view to put readers in the shoes of a man reliving every time he's been called a derogatory name. Another story features a billionaire who wakes up one autumn morning to find he's been magically transformed, which makes him a better man. In the work, a biracial college student lands in L.A. to visit his white father minutes after a jury acquits killer cops and city erupts. Don't worry, he finds a bittersweet kind of redemption in the streets. Come for the laugh-out-loud satire. Stay for the uncomfortable truths it exposes about Black manhood and the power it holds and wields in today's world. The next article is titled, First Timers Going for the Gold. These Olympic hopefuls are training for a chance to compete at this year's Games. A year ago, the Olympic future for hundreds of athletes hung in the balances as the world tried to protect its citizens from the COVID-19 virus. Sports seemed like the last thing on anyone's mind as the Tokyo Olympics faced uncertainty and were eventually postponed. This summer, the games will go on, but with a different format than previous years. Spectators from abroad will not be allowed to attend the International Multisport event, which takes place on July 23rd to August 8th in Japan. Despite the unusual circumstances, athletes who saw their dream deferred in 2020 won't have that happen again as they get ready to compete as part of Team USA. Meet 8 Black women, all first-time Olympic hopefuls whose goals is to make America proud at the Summer Games. Track and field. Alphine Tulia Muke, the Kenyan-born marathoner, is crushing stereotypes by having her first child less than 7 months before the Games. Tulia Muke, who placed first at the 2020 U.S. Olympic Trials for Marathon, had planned to start a family after competing. When the games were postponed, she formulated a new plan that involved training during the first 8 months of her pregnancy, running 6 to 9 miles at a time. Softball. Kelsey Stewart, since her game-winning walk-off hit against Japan in the World Championship, Stewart has been front and center as softball makes a return to Olympic play. In 2020, the utility player from Wichita, Kansas, joined her scrape yard fast pitch team in a walkout to protest a controversial tweet by their general manager, who seemed to criticize athletes who kneeled during the national anthem. Michelle Moultrie. Moultrie has been waiting for her Olympic window since she joined Team USA in 2011 while still in college. Softball had been dropped from the Olympics at the time, and though it was reinstated for Summer Games, it may not make another return until 2028. Now the veteran outfielder from Jacksonville, Florida, heads into Tokyo as a first-time Olympian ready to seize her moment. Winner of the 2014 Kimberley Diamond Championship in South Africa, she became 3 years later the first African-American woman to win a medal at the X Games. In 2018, she was also the first female skateboarder ever to compete in the X Games Real Street Contest. Artistic gymnastics. Jordan Childs. In 2019, Childs left her hometown gym in Vancouver, Washington, to train in Spring, Texas at the World Champion Center, the same training facility used by Simone Biles, the most decorated gymnast in world championship history. The move paid off, as this year, the long-standing senior team member scored a first-place all-around finish at the 2021 Winter Cup. Her performance on the mat offered an exciting sneak peek at her final Olympic form. Freestyle wrestling. Tamara Mensah Stopp, named 2019 United World Wrestling Women's Wrestler of the Year, Mensah Stopp has had her eyes on the game since 2016. The Katy, Texas native won the U.S. Olympic trials in 2016, but didn't qualify to compete in Rio. A 3-time senior world team member, Mensah Stopp took home the bronze medal in 2018 and claimed the championship 1 year later. Now it's time for her Olympic medal. Wrestling, Jakara Winchester. Though an injury took away her 2016 Olympic wrestling dreams, a 2021 debut was all but written for Winchester. The 2019 senior world champion has won at every level of her career. In 2010, the Oakland native was the California Interscholastic Federation Girls State Champ. In 2015, she was the Women's Collegiate Wrestling Association national champion for Missouri Valley. She was also the 2018 and 2019 U.S. Open champ. Basketball. Aja Wilson, one of the WNBA's most dynamic personalities with the game to match. Wilson is ready to add Olympic medalists to her list of accomplishments. The pride of her hometown of Hopkins, South Carolina, Wilson won the 2020 WNBA MVP, the number one draft pick, and Rookie of the Year in 2018, and the 2017 NCAA champion. For the 2021 Olympics, she will join Hall of Fame Team USA coach Dawn Staley, who also coached her at the University of South Carolina. The next article is titled, Six Black-Led VC Funds to Know Now. Only 3% of venture capital investors in the U.S. are Black. But keep an eye on these Black-led funds that are changing the narrative on investing in underrepresented founders. Less than 1% of $150 billion in venture capital funding was distributed to Black startup founders in 2020. The reason? Black founders have limited access to capital due to the lack of diversity in not just the venture capital industry, but tech as a whole. When there are more Black VCs at leading firms and in decision-making seats, Black founders can reap the benefits. However, according to the second edition of the National Venture Capital Association, Deloitte Human Capital Survey, only 3% of investment partners are Black, making Black access to startups, funds, all the more challenging. The need to disrupt the VC industry and create better ecosystem of Black equity is tremendous, and it has inspired the emergence of a few majority-owned Black-led funds. These leaders are raising money to pour back into our community, and they are making their mark as they do so. Mac Venture Capital. In 2019, Marlon Nichols, Adrian Fenty, Michael Palenque, and Charles D. King merged their companies to form Mac C Venture Capital, which recently raised the most significant first fund by a majority Black-led VC firm. The partners, known for their expertise in government, entertainment, technology, finance, and business, came together to invest in technology, startups, and to leverage shifts in cultural trends and behaviors. Their current portfolio of companies ranges from space technology to children-centric social media platforms. With our inaugural $110 million seed stage venture capital fund, we aim to shape the world to form what we'd like to see by investing in like-minded, exceptional entrepreneurs who are building category-leading technology companies, says Nicholas. Mac C Venture Capital has funded companies across the U.S. as well as four operating in Mexico, Kenya, and Nigeria. Collab Capital. Collab Capital seeks to increase ownership within the innovation economy, disrupting the wealth gap and setting the foundation for economic prosperity for the Black community. Jewel Burks Solomon, Barry Givens, and Justin Dawkins founded Collab Capital in 2018 as members of the Gathering Spot in Atlanta. The founders each have a background as a technology entrepreneur. They have built several businesses over the last decade. The fund was inspired by their experiences when raising money. Together, they operate an early-stage investment fund focused on high-growth companies addressing the future of work, care, and learning. Include Ventures. Bahia Yasmin Robinson founded VC Include in 2018 in New York City. The VC Include platform was created to accelerate investment opportunities and training for emerging women and BIPOC-led asset management firms. They recently launched a first-of-its-kind fellowship for BIPOC fund managers and venture capital. In 2021, Robinson joined Todd Eldridge and Keith Spears to launch Include Ventures, the company's investment arm, made up of a $250 million fund with offices in Los Angeles and San Francisco. It is one of the first Black woman-led firms to focus on diversity and culture change. The investment is split in half. One portion focuses on integrating environmental, social, and governance best practices into private and public market funds managed by women of color. The other concentrates on direct investments. Our goal is to change the narrative around ownership of capital, best-in-class asset managers, Black and brown-led technology-enabled companies, and the health of our communities, says Robinson. Fearless Fund. The three founders of Fearless Fund met more than 20 years ago through their HBCU and sorority ties. Ayanna Parsons, Ariane Simone, and Keisha Knight Pulliam invest in women of color-led businesses seeking pre-seed, seed-level, or Series A financing. The fund focuses on supporting companies within the consumer packaged goods, food and beverage, and fashion and beauty industries. Investors of the fund include PayPal, Bank of America, Costco, and MasterCard, which announced an undisclosed multi-million-dollar investment. Our mission is to bridge the gap in venture capital funding for women of color founders, states Simone. Harlem Capital. Henry Pierre Jacquees, Jared Tingle, and Brandon Bryant founded Harlem Capital in December 2015. Their Harlem roots are represented in the maroon color of their logo, an ode to the brownstones of the legendary neighborhood Harlem. Harlem Capital invests in U.S.-based tech-enabled startups founded by women and people of color. We are looking to diversify every aspect of venture industry, from founders to investors to LPs to operators and angels, explains Pierre Jacquees. We believe that equity and ownership is the fastest path to closing the wealth gap. In April 2021, the company raised $134 million for its second fund. Founders First Capital Partners. Serial entrepreneur Kim Falsom launched Founders First Capital Partners in 2015 in San Diego. Falsom noticed the lack of service-based businesses led by women of color and has reached more than $5 million in annual revenue with 50 or more employees. She established a firm to focus on diverse, founder-led, service-based, and revenue-generating small businesses. We provide them with expansion training, direct funding, and advisory support to help them become the largest premium-wage job creators in their communities, she says. Her goal is to fund and grow 1,000 diverse, founder-led, Main Street businesses by 2030. The company just closed on a $9 million Series A with investment from Shoredna Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. Meet two fundraising unicorns. Top-A-A-Ona grew frustrated one day following numerous back-and-forth emails trying in vain to coordinate a meeting. Convinced there was an easier way, he was motivated to start Calendly, which he bootstrapped before recently closing a $350 million investment. The appointment scheduling platform is now valued at more than $3 billion. Toyin Ajayi is part of the trio that founded CityBlock Health, a provider that offers affordable health care. The company, which caters to Medicaid and lower-income Medicare beneficiaries, completed a $192 million Series C extension funding round, bringing its fundraising total to about $500 million since its launch in 2017. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.